Hello, this is Gatley Snitch the Goblin, and you're listening to Oh Really Radio Podcast. It's where people talk about stuff. Sometimes it even matters. You're already here, so you might as well stick around. Enjoy.
We're just trying to change the world here, people.
Oh, really?
Facebooking and the tweeting and the Instagramming, all that would not exist without our understanding of science.
So it's amazing how you do that as an insult.
You mean true for you is different from true for anybody else?
Have yeah,
to
absolutely, because I can't
think either got to be true or not.
I can't, no.
Happy New Year, citizens of Netlandia. This is a really radio show 90 for Friday, January 1st, 2016, where we dismantle the current events for your edutainment through mostly rational conversations that make you go, oh, really? I'm your host, Andy Cowan, with Fred Sims and Stephen Griffith.
Good evening.
Welcome.
Good evening.
New blood for a new year. It's fantastic. We promise not to sacrifice you on the altar of logic and reason quite yet. Okay.
Well, I'm already wearing red.
That's true. You know, so am I. So we're the expendable ones.
I was going to say, I'm the only one surviving this mission.
That's weird. I don't think that's going to... I did read Red Shirts. That is a fantastic book. I think I had it as a pick a couple shows ago. So
yeah, I actually think you discussed it when I was on the show last.
Oh, well then. Maybe I'm not... I shouldn't wear red anymore. That's just the thing. All right. So, let's see. Errata from previous shows. We do make mistakes, so please, if you find one, pause the podcast, send us a note, write us a text. In fact, you can text us over at 470-222-6759, or you can just give us a call and leave a voicemail. We'll play it on the air. However, this time, we have errata from a way, way, way back machine. Back at show 19, August 15th, 2014, we mentioned that... And we had quite a discussion on it, too, about how some police agencies around the country will not hire applicants whose mental capabilities, their IQ score, is too high. This seemed a bit dubious at the time as being completely counterintuitive. We kind of would like intelligent police officers, you know, somebody that you can reason with and things like that. But they were trying to claim that it was to maintain job satisfaction levels and other such bullshittery. Well, today we have a first-hand account of this policy in action. So, Fred,
yes.
That's what you went through.
Honestly, a quick bit of backstory. Last time I was on the show, I mentioned that I did work for the Brevard County Sheriff's Office here in Florida. I worked there 2.5 years. I left the Brevard County Sheriff's Office voluntarily to move to Sarasota with my now ex-wife and family. When I left, my thought was, I've put in 2.5 years to this career. I've been in this job, did fantastic, received a commendation for interpersonal skills, really put my best foot forward, had the thought that going anywhere, I'd be able to get the same job with another county in the state of Florida. Sarasota County was where I applied, went through the hiring process, and when I got to the psychological evaluation, I ran into a Wunderlich personality test and, basically kind of was thrown off. I, know of the Wunderlich test from the NFL where they give it to incoming draftees as a, test of their intellect, give everybody an idea of what kind of player they may be getting. So that kind of threw me, especially because when I was hired with Brevard, I did not have to take this test. So I took the test, went through the entire rest of the psychological evaluation, and the next day when I was supposed to go for my medical evaluation, I was called up and told that they were no longer going to continue in the process with me and that I was not suitable as a candidate anymore. I was a little confused by this because, like I said, I had 2.5 years in the career already, shook me, and for a long time, I thought that maybe there was something I had done to, kind of eliminate myself as a candidate. And it really, I was left kind of shaken in myself and kind of hit my confidence. And that really, it was not the main factor in what broke up my marriage, but it was definitely a part of it. And it's just one of those things where you feel like you found what you're going to do for the rest of your life. And then when they tell you, oh, no, you can't, you're not good enough, you know, you definitely take a hit. You lose some confidence in there. So then I listened to the show and I heard this story, and I heard about them essentially eliminating people who scored too high on this test. I believe the mean that they were finding was their officers on the job had a score of 20 to 21, and they said that that was an IQ of about 107. After listening to it, all of a sudden I started feeling a little bit better. And I mean, really, the reason would be because part of me checking into why I was no longer a suitable candidate was getting the results of my psychological evaluation from Sarasota County. It has my Wunderlich score in there. My Wunderlich score in there was a 33. It states in here that this placed me in the 94.4th percentile, which means that my problem-solving ability intelligence exceeds that of approximately 94% of the general population. This feeds in exactly to that story.
This is where I'd need one of those, like, applause buttons.
Yeah.
Knowing
this, and what I wanted to do first, like, I went and found this paperwork because I was like, oh, I have my paperwork. I don't remember exactly what my score was, but I know it was higher than that 20 to 21 that was mentioned in the show. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to find the paperwork, look it up. And after hearing the show and then looking at this, initially, you know, it's like that immediate, like, you start to feel like buoyed. Like, you start everything that you've been in this trench for so long thinking, I did these, you know, thing to torpedo my career, or I wasn't good enough, or, you know, basically just the negative thought you were having just kind of immediately went away. And it was just one of those situations where, holy crap, I was a victim, if you want to call it that, a victim of this policy. You know, this policy kept me from getting a job. Another line in here, he is likely to master job duties in a relatively efficient manner when compared with the average applicant. So, your average applicant, I'm going to be better than. That's what your results tell you, but you didn't hire me.
Right. You'd think that that would be a good thing, that that would be something that they would desire.
Props to Brevard County for not having this mindset when hiring their sheriff's deputies and their police officers. Because, by the way, my best friend is a sergeant with the Melbourne Police Department. They also do not use this test to test their incoming officers.
Excellent. Excellent. And we have somebody out in the chat room, Miss Safira. I've probably butchered that pronunciation. That's part of my shtick. I butcher pronunciations on things. But she is applauding you and saying, yes, so counterintuitive. And yeah, so it's not just us that thinks it's counterintuitive.
Yes, applaud my intelligence, please. Everyone, clap for me.
Bravo, bravo, bravo.
And for the rest of the show, I will give you examples of how not intelligent I am.
Oh, it's perfectly fine, I'm sure. So I'm just what I really like about your story is, you know, since there's actually very little to genuinely like about it, but it's that, you know, I'm going to give ourselves a little pat on the back here because we mentioned it, you heard it, and it made you feel better that it was not you.
Well, yeah, and obviously that's why I brought it up to you when we talked about it not on the show, mm-hmm. to discuss talking about it on the show, is that I wanted to let you guys know, like, hey, I immediately felt better. It was like a weight that you walk around with for years being lifted, and that kind of feeling is, it's almost indescribable. It's one of those things where it's like, holy crap, like, I could do anything now. I'm not the person I thought I was. I'm not this failure and screw up. I am what I've always, you know, said to be, a hard worker who could do anything, you know, and just losing all of that from listening to a show. It's like, okay, this is why, one, I like this show so much, and two, I wanted to be on it, because on the off chance that some random thing I talk about with you guys could help someone like you guys did for me, would be the best thing I could ever do.
Yes. I'm very pleased. Yay! We've all done a wonderful thing here, I think. So, that just means everybody should listen to the show. So spread the word. Get everybody to listen to the show. You never know what gem of wisdom you will find that will completely change your outlook on life. So there. And with that, one quick message from myself.
Hi, O'Reilly Radio listeners. This is your host, Andy Cowan, calling my voicemail to make sure that it still works. Please consider calling us, 470-222-6759. Bye.
And, of course, you could also send a text message to that standard text rate supply. You know, offer not valid in all states. Please see office for details. Okay. So, let's see. Let's get into rant segments and headlines, as our show notes that are available out on our website at oreillyradio.com will show you. Let's see. George Lucas, not to be removed completely from the limelight, given his baby, his franchise, Star Wars, you might have heard of it, has just released another child, number 7, as it were. Well, this one's kind of an out-of-wedlock baby, because he sold off the entire franchise to Disney, and, well, there you go. But he kind of went off the rails a little bit, Mr. Lucas did. And in it was with Charlie Rose, an interview, like a whole hour-long interview, he said some questionable things, like that he sold Star Wars to white slavers. He has since backpedaled on this because you need to do that, and he probably got some calls from Disney corporate. The mouse probably said, "No, you really shouldn't have said that. You need to say something else."
Yeah, the
a lot of things else.
The white slavers thing. Just where do you in your brain, Mr. Lucas, come up with like why you? You made the choice to sell your product to Disney. You made a pretty penny selling your product to Disney. No one forced you to do this. You made that choice. So why would you sell to them and then go, yeah, they're a bunch of white slavers. They're going to ruin my product. What?
Yes, a day after airing of his provocative critique of the latest Star Wars film and its makers series, creator George Lucas rolled back his comments Thursday saying, he was thrilled with the job Disney has done with the space saga and blown away with the record-breaking blockbuster success of the current hit, The Force Awakens. Lucas apologized for the very inappropriate analogy he used to compare Disney to white slavers, a statement he made during the lengthy interview with CBS News, Charlie Rose. I quote, I have been working with Disney for 40 years and chose them as the custodians of Star Wars because of my great respect for the company and Bob Iger's leadership, Lucas said in a statement issued Thursday afternoon by Disney. Disney is doing an incredible job of taking care of and expanding the franchise. I rarely go out with statements to clarify my feelings, but I feel it's important to make clear that I am thrilled that Disney has the franchise and is moving it in such exciting directions in film, television, and the parks. I believe the mouse will give his balls back probably maybe about Valentine's Day.
Yeah, especially because he's kind of glossing over certain things. I'm not thrilled with this new movie.
No?
For one specific reason. The movie in itself, I loved.
Wait.
Yeah, I'm not going to spoil anything.
Okay.
I'm not. I understand that we're outside of the realm of spoilers. $1.3 billion in your, you know, thus far opening 2 weeks. Everyone's seen this movie, but I'm not going to go into spoilers. I have a very specific reason why I did not enjoy it. Anybody who's seen the movie knows what that reason is. But the movie as a whole, I love Star Wars, so I'm not going to completely bash it. I love the prequels, all of them. What kills me is that Disney is branching out and adding all these things, mm-hmm. but also completely destroying canon. Like, there is an entire library of books that they have basically wiped off the face of the earth. It's now referred to as the Legends universe.
Is that what they've called it?
Yeah, it's Legends, and that's how they're sticking to that, but now they're introducing, you know, certain new canon, and that's where they're gonna go from here on out. So, I mean, that's a lot of authors and a lot of people that have put their creativity and, you know, their ingenuity into this series and, you know, this galaxy, and it's just like being pushed off the table because Disney thinks it can do it better.
Yeah,
the thing is,
I'm concerned about Wikipedia.
You somewhat, but I've also I've looked at a lot of the books. I have a big fan of the EU and everything that occurred with that, but I actually had a friend who's a cinematographer who brought up the idea that there is a creative issue of you have all of this canon that's been built up through all the books, through the Legends universe, and yet, you know, if you try to come in as a movie creator to make stuff for that, you suddenly are basically hogtied with any kind of creative capability because you have all of those books and all of these things that have come already.
Yeah. Well, we've seen what Abrams has done with the canon for Star Trek as well.
Well, yeah, and that was obviously a concern for people going in is what you did with Star Trek. And honestly, I'm one of the few people, I like Star Trek, but I'm not a Trekkie, if you will. I've seen the things, but I you couldn't quiz me on it and have me answer even at a 20% capability on my answers. But watching the stuff that he did with Star Trek was amazing because it didn't have to be, because as soon as he said this is another, like an alternate universe, okay, great, now you can do whatever you want. That didn't happen here.
The wonders of time manipulation
exactly.
To create an entire alternate universe.
Yeah, we went through
Done.
That wormhole, boom, we're good. Like, okay, two Spocks, awesome. You just made this double the fun. Like, it's amazing. But with the Star Wars stuff, there is so much. There is a ton of stuff after the Yuuzhan Vong, which I'm not going to go into, but there's a very long series of books with the Yuuzhan Vong that essentially ends about 30 years after A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, we're at, what, 32 years or 35 years after A New Hope? So we...
Are we that far? I don't even know that we're that far.
Since that movie came out.
Oh, well, since the movie came out.
Right,
but I'm talking about within the series of movies.
That, right.
Timeline-wise, which... We've seen how wonderful Lucas is at maintaining a very rigorous timeline.
Right, and that's yeah.
Prequels. Horrible.
and that's part of it, is the books kind of do hamstring you, but at the same time, they could have picked up from the end of the books, just used the characters from the books, and created a new story. Because that's the great thing about the books, is even they would introduce you to new characters, so
sure.
They could still have Rey and Finn and introduce that whole story, but keep some of the canon going.
Mean that all the people, all the writers, would have to read how many books?
Just hire writers that already have.
Yeah. How many books?
It's a lot of books.
It's a lot of books. Yeah. You'd have to be a really true fan, and then it would all just be, you know, continuing fan fiction, but I suppose that's what it all is. Anyway, it's fiction for the fans. You have to be in it to win it. These guys...
They're winning.
They are winning.
$1.34 billion in 2 weeks, I believe it is. So,
they are absolutely winning. I do have a couple concerns. The very first of which is, you know, being that I have female children, so I am a feminist by nature, because I have to be. And, Rey is basically... This shouldn't be a spoiler, Dave. She's really the main character for this particular movie.
Yes.
She may not be for the next one. We'll see how it goes. But she is a focal point. The camera follows her, really. A lot of the missions, to get her, to follow her to this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there's not a single toy on the shelves with her likeness in them. It's ridiculous. It is mind-numbingly, why have you done this? Of course, then I slip into the devil's advocate mode, and it's like, oh, well, it's just because they're not selling toys to the girls. They're selling toys to the boys. That's their thing. And the boys don't want to play with the girls' toys, or a girl even in them, apparently.
They had Leia figures.
They had slave Leia figures, mostly. And at no point, and it was mentioned in several other things, they had mentioned that Rey is, she's not once mentioned as, you know, being a sexy little thing, or, you know, her sex appeal is not offered up as any descriptive for her. You know, she's talented, she has skills, and those are the things that she is praised for.
Right. I honestly, I had not noticed anything about merchandise geared towards Rey. And I wonder if that's because, and if you looked at a lot of the marketing going into it, mm-hmm. The actor that played Finn has been regarded as the new face of the Star Wars franchise. And I just wonder if that's Disney being, only politically correct in one area. Like, oh, we have a black guy that's the star now, so we're going to push him, and then completely forgetting, like, hey, by the way, there's way more people that you should be across the board, you know, everyone should be equal. Yeah. You know, it's not like, oh, great, we cast a black guy, so we're going to go ahead and push him, as opposed to, hey, why don't you just push everybody as a whole? Like, you have a whole new group of people to push. They actually had two female characters. Captain Phasma is a female.
That's true. That's very true.
And for all the, she actually, because being one of the new villains, she actually is on a lot of things. There's a lot of Captain Phasma. What disappointed me was then she only got like 14 minutes of screen time in that entire movie. Like it was almost like she was the forgotten female once it started.
Yeah, so, she was a voice, but barely. You know, we never saw a face. Maybe we're just teased by that, and we'll get more of her next time.
I can only hope, because I think the backstory and just learning more about that character would be great.
Yeah,
it would. On a side note, when it comes to Captain Phasma, can I get a hands up and congratulations to the fact that she was not wearing boob armor?
That's true.
That was a fantastic story going in. At least Disney hit a home run on that one. When they called out, when people were like, oh, that's a female, why isn't she wearing boob armor? And Disney said, because it's armor. It doesn't have to show boobs.
That's right. That's right.
Boob armor is very dangerous to the person wearing it, as many, many shows have shown armor have shown.
That's true. Yeah. All sorts of bad things can come from overly sexualized armor. It's like, this is completely ineffectual.
Well, yeah, I mean, look at He-Man. His armor was literally in one place. That is the worst medieval superhero of all time.
But by the power of Grayskull. I mean, come on.
Like, the only reason why that helps him is because his main villain doesn't have eyeballs. He just has a skull for a face.
It's true.
Skeletor was blind. I'm throwing that out there.
Well, no, he wasn't blind because he saw by magic, because he was also a skeleton that could animate itself and move around. So we're already stretching credulity for, you know, the laws of physics and biology. Yeah. So
also, the only bones he had was his skull. He was ripped.
That's true. He did have muscles.
He did have amazing six-pack abs for a skeleton.
Yeah. So, however that worked. You know, maybe he became Cobra Commander later.
Either that, you know, or he's the
face mask.
Scorpion from Mortal Kombat, and then he was there, like, oh crap, I should put a mask on and fight in the ninja style.
Yeah, see, there you go, fan fiction all over the place. We got crossovers aplenty. Enjoy. All right, in other news, Obama has announced a new executive action on... Oh wait, hang on. Let me go back, because there was one other thing that bothered me about the series that I remembered. About the newest movie.
Okay.
Why is 3PO's left arm red?
And no explanation.
No explanation at all.
He wandered into a bad neighborhood and got tagged.
I don't know. It's kind of crazy. It's like, where did that come from?
Oh, and at the end, it's back to gold.
Was it?
Yes.
Huh.
After they win the battle and everything, and everything's all good, back to gold.
What was he up to? Hmm.
Which apparently neither the books or one of the comic books that comes out as a connection to it, they actually explain what happened with his arm.
Ah, of course. Merchandising.
I mean, they're going to get people. I want to know why his arm was red. Read this.
Yeah, exactly. Like me. I want to know. Inquiring minds want to know. Okay, now back to real news. Obama is to announce new executive action on guns. This should be entertaining. There's going to be a State of the Union address in the new year, starting on, I believe it's going to be January 12th. And plans for this action are not yet fully complete, according to an article out on Wesh News, which is a local NBC affiliate for us. it is described as going to be an imminent action, so it's going to happen. They're not exactly sure exactly when, because there are things that could delay the announcement. But gun control advocates so far are expecting the new actions to be revealed next week. So we will be we'll be covering that next week. We'll see what happens. And as Ms. Safira says, he's coming for our guns. Well, maybe. Maybe not. Probably not. From what I understand, it's going to be expanded background checks, more enforcement of the laws that are already in place, which would be nice. So maybe...
You know, the things that people are asking for that make sense.
Yeah, we've the show has discussed at length the gun show loophole and how you can get guns.
There's a gun show coming up soon. I heard it on the radio.
Oh, jeez. Right around here in Brevard County?
Yep, at the, where they always do it, that convention center.
The Melbourne Civic Center,
I believe. Yes, that one.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And they talk about tables of all these different guns.
Yeah. You know what you're not allowed to do at gun shows?
Shoot people.
Open carry. You are not allowed to open carry weapons at a gun show. They say keep them away.
They put them in a paper bag when you buy them by the dozen? You have to walk out with them in a paper bag?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't go to gun shows. I don't own a firearm. I merely own many other traps. Yes. Other things. You shouldn't come for me. Don't do that. Anyway.
Yeah, one of the things that bothers me, besides all of the things that bother me when you get into the argument of gun control, in the story where, you know, the group said at the time that Obama had his wish list of gun control in California, but it didn't prevent the San Bernardino attack. Okay. This gun control is not going to stop every attack, but this specifically,
it's not a silver bullet.
You can't have gun control in one state and then go, "Oh, well, that didn't stop it." Well, why didn't it stop it? Because I can buy these guns in every other state and just bring them to California. They didn't put up a force field that's going to keep them out.
Right.
You can get them anywhere, bring them in, commit your crime, and they'll be like, "Oh, well, that's banned." But not everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem, because it's not nationwide regulation. It's just in the state of California. That doesn't stop anything. 49 other places I can buy those weapons, have them, and just take them to California to shoot up whoever I want.
Right. Like as we were mentioning on yet a previous show, thanks to The Daily Show, you know, going through their rigmarole, you can just get a concealed carry permit in the state of Florida, and you don't have to live here to get it. And then you're good for, like, what was it, 15 states?
Yeah, it was a number of other states,
yeah.
But thankfully not Virginia anymore, who decided that they were going to stop honoring concealed carry permits that people obtained in other states.
That seems like a good idea.
It does, but of course it was argued against, you know, like, oh, you know, I can't believe they're getting rid of reciprocity, and, you know, what are we going to do? I don't know. Get the concealed carry permit in Virginia if you want it that bad?
Mm-hmm. That would make sense. You know?
Or do the thing that one person said of may have a national concealed carry permit, but of course that gets the federal government involved.
Right. We don't want the national government involved in our guns. Mm-mm.
Oh, because heaven forbid that they tell you that you can only concealed carry weapons that are actually, you know, like, not an automatic Glock that shoots 45 bullets. You know, obviously, hyperbole, those that are listening.
Right.
You know.
Because, as we know, fully automatic weapons are still illegal, no matter what.
Yes.
If you want a fully automatic weapon, you should go down and see your recruiter. Just join the military. They'll hand you one. And they'll train you. So go. Why not? Okay. Enough with that, at least for the moment. Now, on to technology news. Okay, so we were talking at length in many, many, many previous shows about our own Tony Stark.
Elon Musk.
His Tesla's Gigafactory is apparently going into production very shortly, and it is enormous. The first groundbreaking of actual ground was in the summer of 2014 outside of Sparks, Nevada. And in 2016, it brings the plans to actually start taking a stab at the blueprints for the massive manufacturing plant. So apparently, it's so big, it's just taking this long. I've seen some things go up in record time, especially factory buildings, which are just boxes, essentially. But there's some interesting, apparently it's going to have solar panels completely on the roof, so it's going to be almost energy independent, I believe. A lot of modernization features. It's predicted to be around 3,000 acres. That's the building.
The world's second largest building by volume.
Roughly three times the size of New York's Central Park. Jeez.
And then it does say that the production will be operating on 100% electric.
Kicking fossil fuels to the curb. Of course, it's a battery plant. So the battery plant not operating on fossil fuels, that's fantastic. That's really great. But I wish that they could get it done a little faster. Apparently, it's supposed to be finished in 2020. I guess that's not too far away for some of these major things.
Well, you really want it to be done early because you want that $35,000 Tesla car, and that's it mentions in here. That's what they're trying to spearhead is the production of that with this factory.
Yeah. I also would like to point out that, and it's something that's not in this article, but it's there. The Tesla, there's a picture of the Tesla lobby there, and it says Tesla Gigafactory 1. If you're going to name something with a number, usually you mean there's going to be other numbers.
Well, of course. How many different versions of the Iron Man armor does Tony Stark have? He's got more than one.
He had a lot. That's true. He had a lot.
Now, is this the factory? Because wasn't it Tesla that was going to be paying all their factory workers $25 an hour to start? Wasn't that a story?
Yes, they were talking about that. I don't remember exactly when that was.
Was
but
it this
hey,
factory? Because I thought it was in Nevada that they were talking about.
Yeah, it would have to be this one then. Yeah. Okay, so apparently photographers are not allowed to go to the site at all. Car photographer James Lipman was able to sneak a few pictures out of Instagram. Apparently, I'm not sure why he was able to. It's going to be enormous. That is just, it's pretty. So I think good money is on Tesla to make some inroads for the future. I'm concerned about it being in 2020 just because of the way they've had stock market shares going crazy. There's a lot of pressure on them to make a lot more money than they technically are making. They ought to be making more cars. They ought to be doing this. You know, so says the market.
And it's one of those things where you got to wonder, they have a modicum of success. Are they reaching too much too fast? You know, should they focus, build more of a base, and then start doing all these things? You know, don't overextend yourself and destroy the brand. If I trust anybody to do it, it would, you know, real life Tony Stark.
Yeah, it should be very interesting. Now, as Ms. Sifra is saying out in the chat room, 2020 is absolutely realistic if the building is going to be that big. And that is very true, especially given all the other features that they're going to be putting into it. So, yeah, but given the way the stock market goes, it's a very emotional thing versus something that's actually logical. So we can throw logic at it all day long. Yeah, it makes perfect sense in a reasonable fashion. But I think the thing that's going to carry them is what the expectations are for this. And the expectations are high because their goal is selling 500,000 cars per year by 2020. That's a lot of electric cars. This is the end of the fossil fuel car era. We're right here at that tipping point. So once they get that Model 3, the $35,000 one, that's going to be really impressive. And of course, he's not the only one making electric cars or even self-driving cars.
No.
So we're going to see some really amazing stuff by 2020. And yeah, that's not far away anymore. we just hit 2016. We're living in the future.
Yeah, you had said 2020 earlier, and in my the first thing that popped into my head was, oh, that's only 5 years.
Yeah.
Nope. Four now.
Yeah, it's only four now, so that's not too bad. Of course, they've already been working on it for quite a bit of time, so it's like, eh, I don't know, is that quick or not? As you get older, folks, time slips away from you in ways that you are not able to predict when you're young. You have no concept at all. If somebody says, oh yeah, that happened in the 90s, I'm thinking it was only 10 years ago.
I do that all the time.
Not 26 years
yep,
ago.
I do that all the time. When I look at something and it's like, oh, 1998. And I'm like, oh, that wasn't that long ago. That was, oh.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh no. Yeah. It happens all the time. So take what we say with a grain of salt, because we're getting old. And so are you out there. Yes, you watching on YouTube. You. Anyway. That's a perfect example. Go to YouTube. YouTube.com/ORLYRADIO. And you can watch our entire back catalog of videos from the show. Live streamed and stored directly up there for all of your edutainment. For posterity. And, yes, so we do have two guests in the chat room. Kate and Misfer. Thank you very much. And yes, it's ambitious and no shit, time does fly. So, let's see. Speaking of time flying, we're getting a lot of play on the story, so we might have to adjust the format, because, yeah, I wanted to talk about that one, and I couldn't help it. Apparently, I guess I'm just gonna play it, because there is an autoplay video, and it's hilarious. It does more justice to it than I possibly could, so just listen in. And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This is a woman who police say was arrested after drinking wine, eating sushi, muffins, and chicken at a Walmart in Florida. 20-year-old Jocelyn Alida Lopez consumed about $32 worth of food and wine while she was at the store, including cinnamon rolls, mini muffins, two bottles of wine, and rotisserie chicken with sauce. The Citrus County Sheriff's Office responded to the store after a loss prevention employee contacted them about the shoplifter he had in custody. The employee told deputies that he noticed a woman was acting suspiciously and driving the motorized shopping cart. When deputies arrested her, they found two empty syringes, one in her purse and one in her backpack. She told detectives she had used the syringes to shoot up meth earlier. When they asked her why she took the food, she said she was hungry and didn't want to bring it outside the store. I'm Miles Miller, Pixel.
So, yeah, Florida woman. Woohoo! Keeping it classy, Florida. Keeping it classy. Let's see. I don't have anything to say. Though, I must say, have you noticed that, you know, the finer Walmart shoppers out there, have you noticed that they let anybody use those motorized carts? Absolutely anybody?
Well, I don't know how you would monitor that. I mean, if someone came in there and started to use, or you just, hey, why are you using that? I mean, you would get into those situations where, why are you questioning why I'm using it? You don't, you know, maybe I made it from outside to in here with the help of somebody, and now I got to use this cart. It kind of, you know, I just don't know how you would police it other than that. I mean, she was clearly very young. In fact, when I saw this story, she looked like someone I know. And I had to read it because I was like, oh, God, please don't let that be someone I actually know. And read the story to make sure. I love how when he was talking about it, he goes through, you know, $32 worth of food, a rotisserie chicken, including sauce like that. How much did the sauce add to the price of what she ate? Like,
you know, it's just that she was also dipping it as she was riding around. I think it paints a nice picture, really.
It is. And those, I mean, they have a basket on there, so you lay out your smorgasbord picnic in front of you and you, you know, cruise through the store. Surprising, that meth doesn't inhibit your ability to drive a motorized cart.
We're also having some feedback here saying that, yes, they get abused at Publix as well. So, yeah, those carts. I'm pleased that they're there. I just hope that I personally never, ever have to use one.
There is a meme on the internet that I saw today.
Though I kind of want to.
A picture of one of those empty motorized carts, like in the middle of an aisle. And it says, yes. I witnessed a miracle today when the battery died.
I saw that too. That was hilarious. That was great. Oh, let's see. Let's see. Let's move right along. Ah, let's move on from Walmart to Detroit.
Yeah, because they're the same.
They're about the same. It's roughly the same. At least if you're RoboCop, they're exactly the same. But this is actually good news for a change out of Detroit. Apparently, job applicants that have, say, a poor past, say a felony, for instance, in your job history, would usually eliminate you from the job pool.
I wouldn't say usually. I would go with 90, 95%, like almost 100% of the time, a felony is going to preclude you from employment.
Yeah, and there's an awful lot of things that are classified as felonies, even though they may... Well, there's a varied level of things that that people can get in trouble for.
Yeah, and every state is different.
Right. So, at Edward Jackson of Detroit, he is... What is Jackson? I missed what he was. Anyway, Jackson spent 20 years in prison. Oh, he is the applicant in question at age 52. He spent 20 years in prison on drug and weapon charges over his lifetime. And every time he was freed, he eventually fell back into trouble because he could never find gainful work. Like millions of Americans with criminal histories, whom advocates call returning citizens, he found himself turned away quickly by employers. Quote, because of my felonies, it's always the same message. Oh, we're not hiring. We don't need you, Jackson said over coffee at an American Coney Island downtown. It kind of pushes you back onto the streets. But when I came home this time, I just made my mind up. I wasn't going back on the streets. So his chance at a real job, let's see, in Detroit, I'm going to skip a little past this. Detroit in 2010 joined cities and companies across the country that have banned the box, a national movement to not require job seekers to indicate on their employment applications that they have felony histories. That doesn't mean that they don't have to disclose their backgrounds, but the disclosure comes later in the hiring process, which gives returning citizens a fairer shot at being dismissed outright. So... This is a good thing. I had not actually heard about this movement in 2010 about the banning the box thing. So I'm glad that it's actually working. And in a place such as Detroit, that's really important, I think.
You know, in anywhere. Again, anecdotally, having worked for the Brevard County Sheriff's Office, I was in the jail. I know that it is a revolving door. Once you go in that door the first time, we're going to see you again. You will be back. It is what it is. The part of the problem is, like he said, he would leave, not be able to get jobs because of his felony record, and then go right back to jail. Part of the probation and parole system is that they have to maintain employment. But that's then they hard. Can't find employment, and it causes them to violate their parole or their probation. And it's just this giant cycle, vicious, vicious cycle that they can't get out of. So this program, you know, pushing to eliminate that so that they have a fair chance at these jobs is absolutely amazing, because once they've gone in and done their time, we're essentially telling them that wasn't enough. You didn't pay your debt to society because we still don't trust you. We don't trust you to have these jobs, to be with, you know, regular society, air quotes. And, you know, we're going to keep you apart from them by denying you jobs and then sending you back to jail. So the ability to move forward as a society and realize they went to jail, they, you know, paid their debt for the crime that they committed, and now they should be able to come back out and reintegrate and hopefully, you know, just break that cycle and stop going back and building the population of jail. That's amazing. This is a great story.
Yeah, the National Employment Law Project, NELP, says that 19 states and 100 cities and counties, along with a number of major corporations, have banned the box. The companies include Koch Industries, Target, Home Depot, Walmart, and Starbucks. So there's Walmart in there as well as tie-in.
See, they were the same.
They actually were the same, amazingly enough. Who knew? All right, let's see. We have so many things to talk about today. We should probably move it right along. There's something that popped up in the news feeds today that is disgusting. It's absolutely horrible. And I'm sure that people on Facebook have been seeing a lot more pictures of ladies breastfeeding. There's a reason for that. It's become quite the hot political issue. A self-described pro-family conservative said on Facebook that he should be allowed to grab the nipple of breastfeeding mothers if a law banning women exposing breasts in public didn't pass. This guy is New Hampshire State Representative Josh Moore, Republican. The comment was deleted rather quickly, of course, but things on the internet tend to be a little sticky. Yeah. If anything, this is the message for 2016. Okay. All politicians, anybody with aspirations of things like that, if you're going to say something inflammatory, something that's going to get you in hot water, something that is way beyond the pale, you probably shouldn't put it in writing on the internet because it will haunt you forever. Forever. Okay. So it was archived and then, of course, posted by Slate. Apparently there is a proposed legislation in New Hampshire, that would make it a crime for women to expose their nipples in public. Currently in New Hampshire, both men and women are free to go topless, reports Slate. A bill proposed solely by Republican men would change that. If it becomes law, a woman could be charged with a misdemeanor if she, quote, purposely exposes the areola or nipple of her breast or breasts in a public place and in the presence of another person with reckless disregard for whether a reasonable person would be offended or alarmed by such act. I'm sorry. I'm going to show my breasts with reckless disregard. That is a fantastic statement, really. I don't have anything to say about it, really, other than that. But Moore's statement, this Josh Moore guy, should be a real wake-up call for the absolute blatant misogyny that seems to be running rampant in the country, especially with good old Donald Trump leading the charge, calling everybody and their brother, you know, murderers, rapists, etc., whatever bad thing they can possibly come up with. And one of our chat room guests says, I wish I could be surprised. That's how bad it is. Yeah. I'm not surprised by this at all.
We seem to be on a 1 foot forward, you know, 1 step forward, 2 steps back type situation. Marriage equality was a great step forward.
Yep.
And now the misogyny and racism are like, hey, we'll just focus on these instead and taking two giant steps back. And I mean, just ignoring everything else that he said, there's so many things that you can talk about. I mean, that's not okay because, I mean, it's like the next step is rape. I mean, that how about this? The definition of battery in the state of Florida is any unwanted physical contact. I could touch your shoulder. If it's unwanted and you wanted to press charges, I technically battered you.
Isn't that amazing?
I don't know, obviously, what the law in New Hampshire is, but by Florida standards, that would be battery. So now you've just committed a crime.
Right.
But you're saying that that's okay. I'll take it out of the realm of breastfeeding into a realm that some men may know, some don't. How about a strip club? You're not allowed to touch those women who bare their breasts for money. Why would you be allowed to do it to women who are bearing their breasts for breastfeeding? And then on top of that, are you going to take that nipple out of the child's mouth? Because it's not like she's sitting there, you know, just, oh, this is my nipple and waving it all around. It's for a purpose.
Right.
Her child is eating. Her child is growing. Her child is getting nutrients. You're just going to walk up and be like, move, baby, let me grab that nipple.
that's a picture. That's certainly a picture. Yeah. No, it's all bad. It's all bad there. There's no good way to even discuss this.
Well, even in what he says, where is it in what he says about it's all relative and natural? It's not natural. Like, there's nothing natural. I did not grow up and be like, oh, I'm going to grab women's breasts. It's something inherent in a man that you are attracted to a female's breasts, but it's not natural to just go up and put your hands all over them. You know, what's natural is, hey, that woman's going to tell you it's okay for you to touch her, and then you can do it. That's natural. That's any sane human being is going to go, yeah, those aren't mine. I shouldn't touch them.
That would make sense.
And my favorite part is
get a legal scholar in there to ask about what specifically reckless disregard means, because that is so broad and vague as to be practically meaningless.
Not even that. What a reasonable person would view as offensive. All the people that are offended by this are not reasonable.
There you go. Yeah.
So wait, I'm a reasonable person. I'm not offended by this. So it's cool. They can all go topless. Like, that's, I'm perfectly fine with that. Feed your baby. It doesn't bother me. I'm going to continue eating my Dunkin' Donuts and drinking my, you know, Dunkachino. Like, I don't care. It's fine.
Well, I think that we have far too many people that are way prudish about things. You know, we're not allowed to show anything sexual on TV, but we can show buckets of blood all over the place.
I know my favorite part in this, honestly, outside of all of that, is on more social media profiles, he identifies himself as pro-family. And then his, you know, part of his bio, love God, country, guns, and family. Wait a minute, how is family the fourth thing on your list if you're pro-family?
Well, it's on the list.
Beyond that, there's something I've seen again and again and again with, and I have to say it's mostly with GOP, is you will see them praising God, praising family, praising America, and typically being hardcore anti-homosexual, anti-gay, and yet these are still the people who get caught, you know, petitioning men or slipping notes under doors asking for, well, homosexual contact.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. It's hypocrisy. Complete hypocrisy. Do as I say, not as I do. All those fun things. So, let's see. I think that's quite enough of that. We can move along. Something that I was unaware of was that in order to climb Mount Everest, not only do you have to have balls of steel, but you also have to have $70,000 for a permit. I didn't know that it cost 70 grand to climb Mount Everest. This was
the money would be to travel out there.
Yeah, I mean that's not even the cost for that. That's just the permit. So why does it cost $70,000 to climb Mount Everest? That was the question posed on an article on LiveScience.com. It's crazy. The permit is issued per expedition with about 7 to 10 people on each permit. Okay, good. So at least it's not an individual.
Who are you paying for the permit?
I believe Nepal.
Hey, so, I mean, could it be because they finally realize the toll that it's taking for all the debris and litter and dead bodies and human feces that are on Mount Everest now? They're like, hey, we should probably get something, you know, to boost our economy and maybe send some people up there to clean that up, if possible, at all?
I don't think they're ever going to send anybody up there to just do some cleanup. I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, I come from, you know, a Boy Scouting background. You know, the whole leave no trace thing? You're supposed to bring everything out that you've brought in. Which could include your feces, I guess. It's cold. You just put it outside the tent. Let it freeze. You'll be fine. And then bring it with you. But, yeah, apparently that is just not what's done. If a mountaineer wants to buy a permit only for themselves, the price is much more modest at 25 grand. Money collected by the Nepalese government for the permit goes towards ensuring that Mount Everest is kept pristine, as it is considered holy by local villages. So, there's that. I guess there's that. It costs that much because it's a holy place. And we don't want we want to keep the riffraff out.
Just like churches in America?
Maybe.
Maybe. Mount Everest is the super church of Nepal.
I guess it is, yeah. It's a mega church. Apparently, this is also about cleaning up the garbage left over from decades of previous expeditions. So this is apparently a new thing, and they're going to start doing that. So the permit also grants them legal permission to be on Mount Everest so that in the event of an emergency, Nepalese authorities will rescue the climbers in distress. That's good. It's like a lifeline. You got to pay for that crap, though.
So privatized Mount Everest insurance?
Essentially, yeah. The cost of the permit also goes towards paying for the liaison officers that stand guard at various camp stops along the trek. The officers monitor climbers' use of communication devices, help them get weather reports to make sure that the mountaineers follow the strictly enforced climbing schedule, as no climbing is permitted on the mountain after 6 p.m. So, you know, there's a lot going on here with an expedition to Mount Everest. Not counting the permit fee, the total price of climbing Mount Everest is staggering, with just the optional expenses, round-trip transportation, mountaineering guides, extra oxygen bottles, tents, and communications devices easily totaling over $200,000, according to the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration. So the FAA is keeping tabs on this, which is interesting. Bottles of oxygen cost between $300 and $400, and each person should carry about 5 or 6 bottles during an expedition. $2,000 in just oxygen. They need to talk to those Perrier folks that we had on last. Okay. I'm not going to climb Mount Everest. Not only would it cost more money than I ever have, but I don't wish to die on the summit. I don't think that's going to happen for me. Not a thing.
I'll just wait until they have the option on the Oculus Rift and do it that way from the comfortability of my own couch.
There you go. There you go. Well, you might have to, like, stand near a freezer just to have the door open.
Just to simulate the cold?
Right, and then have somebody pour ice down your pants.
I was going to say, I'll kick my central air down to 50.
Yeah.
And be then, like, oh, it's freezing in here while I'm climbing Mount Everest in a sitting position.
And stand in front of, yeah, sit in front of a box fan and have somebody do the ice bucket challenge on you, too. I think that'll give you the full experience. Maybe not. I don't know. Also, in other news, Christian leaders have been having a bit of a kerfuffle over a mayor that took the office, his oath of office, on a constitution instead of the Bible. Last week, the new mayor of Franklin, North Carolina, Bob Scott, took his oath of office on a constitution instead of a Bible. He told the American Humanist Association that he made the decision because, quote, there is so much controversy surrounding separation of church and state. I'm a firm believer in keeping religion and government separate. We would hope that other politicians would follow suit regardless of their theological views, but since they're being elected to uphold the constitution and not any specific religious text, but apparently Reverend Mark H. Creech, C-R-E-E-C-H, if anyone wants to look him up, he is the executive director of North Carolina's Christian Action League, says that it's troubling. Creech is the woeful ignorance of Scott's view is breathtaking. He says, and now I was quoting the article, so, you know, you may take that with whatever grain of salt you desire. You can no more separate our nation's form of government from the Christian religion than you can separate smoke from fire or water from ice. I would say that he doesn't actually know how chemistry works. Mayor Scott certainly has the right to reject putting his hand on the Bible when taking his oath of office, but his choice sends a dangerous message that places every citizen at risk. Hyperbole much?
Yeah, because every citizen is Christian.
Yeah, his actions declare the erroneous notion that our rights come from the state, not God. I don't think that's erroneous.
I wonder what Reverend Creech would think about John Quincy Adams, who took his oath of office as president on a book of law instead of a Bible.
He would probably say the same thing. They would double down on that kind of rhetoric.
Yeah, he would tell him that, you know, that Constitution thing that his dad helped write and sign in, that didn't come from men, it came from God.
That's right.
I think he's confusing the Constitution with how Mormons got their rules.
Oh, with seer stones and a hat?
Yes.
I look at that and I think of the Treaty of Tripoli, which specifically stated by several of the founders of mm-hmm. the country and signers of the Constitution that this is not and never has been a Christian nation.
Yep. I highly recommend that as reading. Go ahead and take a look for the Treaty of Tripoli. It's great. Also, let's move right along from that one because, well, there's not much more to say. I think we're in favor of swearing on a rule of law in order to uphold a rule of law.
Oh, yeah. I think that mayor said it best himself.
Absolutely. In a tangentially related thing, apparently there is a widely famed Christian apologist. His name is Kent Hovind. He is a evangelical creationist, young earth creationist, and he asserted this week that God had purposefully put contradictions into the Bible to weed out non-believers. I'll just let that sink in a little bit, that the book that is supposed to be a, by many accounts, a perfect representation of God's will, was purposely made wrong in ways to make non-believers... I don't even know what he's talking about here.
So that people that were having questions of faith could easily find their way out of faith. Before getting into anything else, can your perfectly infallible God purposely make himself fallible? Is that, like, can that even happen?
Then you're asking, you know, it's the unimportant questions of how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. Can God create a stone so heavy that it cannot lift it? You know, things of that nature, which it doesn't get you anywhere.
Well, I love his assertion that, you know, God specifically put in contradictions in the book, and yet I'm waiting for the other, you know, massive number of evangelicals to jump on him screaming, as they've done to me at several times, that there are no contradictions whatsoever in that book.
Right, yeah.
How about not even no contradictions? Just let somebody explain to him that God didn't write it?
Oh, well, it's the perfect inspired word of God, you know, because the pens were the... Yeah, all the scribes were magically told exactly what they
Which would be the argument for most evangelicals, but when you read what he said, if I was God, I would write the book, but God didn't write it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I was God, he explains, I would write the book in such a way that those who don't want to believe in me anyway would think they found something. Aha, here's why I don't believe. I don't think he understands, like, a lot of things, but at least the way this works. So, yeah. Also, congratulations on the world passing by, how old is it now? It's over 6,000 years old.
But still young.
You know, greatly.
Still a younger.
But it's still young, yeah.
Certainly. I mean, it definitely reads in to exactly what Stephen said, though, because Hovind says that he made a choice to believe the Bible until it's proven wrong. But what contradictions then?
Right. Yeah. None of that makes any sense. Okay. So with that, let's talk a little bit more reason and get a message from the Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia Project.
Are you annoyed by misinformation spreading like crazy, and you want to stop the flood of nonsense coming from all directions? Go to Wikipedia, as do all those millions out there. Did you know there's an edit button on all Wikipedia articles? Why don't you go and hit that button to start making the world's largest online encyclopedia a more reliable source of information? If you're specifically interested in skeptical topics, Come and join us at Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia, an international endeavor to change the world for the better, word by word. There are many ways you can contribute. You just need to start. You speak several languages, all the more reason to join us. We provide training and all the help you need. If you want to make a change, there's a nice community waiting for you out there. Contact us at gsowteam@gmail.com, visit our website, that's gorillaskeptics.com, or check out the Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia Facebook page.
All right, we're returning to our old format, which we missed a couple times there, but now we're into the good, and in some bright good news for the city of New York. They are actually following through on something that they stated in November of 2014, that they are installing gigabit Wi-Fi public access points in the place of pre-existing telephone booths. So it was, what was today? December 28th. Workers began installing the first Link NYC access points in New York. It's going to be interesting. There's supposed to be 7,500 eventual public hubs throughout the city, each replacing a pre-existing phone booth. Once completed, the hubs will also include USB device charging ports, touchscreen web browsing, and two 55-inch advertising displays. The city estimates that the ads served by its new hubs will generate more than $500 million in revenue over the next 12 years, which ought to at least pay for it, I suppose. So this is pretty cool. I really probably shouldn't have put it in the good because it doesn't really need a whole lot of chitter chatter, but I just thought that everyone should know that this is the way things ought to be. If you're going to get rid of the your old payphones, because hardly anybody uses them anymore, certainly you can. There is a place for them. I'm not sure exactly where. Maybe like at a post office. I don't know. I don't use them anymore. Everybody has a cell phone at this point. Pretty much? Maybe? I don't know. Maybe I'm not the right person to talk about that. But, with being that it's a tech angle and that we're moving into the future, considering all these things, I think it's going to be a great thing to have public access to the internet wherever you are. So, I'm surprised that this isn't being more advertised by or supported by Google or Facebook, because I know that what's his name? Zuckerberg. He has been on the warpath about everyone needing internet access. Of course, his company kind of relies on people having internet access, so it's in his best interest, but he's definitely been pushing for it to be a public utility where everyone needs it.
I definitely think that New York is a great place to start this experiment. Get it out there. Let everybody that goes to New York, it's a huge tourist hub. Mm-hmm. They can get there, try it out. You know, once they see, you know, how amazing it is, the benefits, and it starts to spread, then we'll probably see it as a more mainstream option everywhere. Granted, you know, here, in our little corner of the world in Florida, there's not as many phone booths. So they'd have to find other ways to link this in. But, you know, I think there it's a great way to start and just see, you know, that way everyone can see exactly what kind of benefit you'd get. It should be obvious, but sometimes the obvious is only obvious when it's slapping you in the face.
Yeah. Go ahead, Steve.
So what I like is the fact they're showing, you know, New York is getting gigabit. The place where I live, which is a little town called Apopka, actually has free public Wi-Fi across the entire city, which was installed a few years ago, and anybody can get access to it. There's no real login requirements, which is a nice thing to see. I like to see the fact that New York is a lot faster than we are, and the setup is slightly different, but it's nice seeing everything moving toward that almost futurist inspiration.
Yeah, I can definitely see this as something that you would see in perhaps a less bleak Blade Runner kind of thing. You know, because it is futurist. And, yeah, we like that. We like that kind of thing around here.
I mean, there's definite questions involved too, because they are, you know, Wi-Fi access points.
Mm-hmm.
So is it 7,500 different public hubs? All of them have the same, you know, login requirements so that your phone isn't constantly searching as you go out of range of one and into range of another. It just immediately kicks back on, you know, those type of things.
Yeah, they should all be the same SSID. Yeah, the same. Yeah, it really should be that way. If it isn't, then the engineers need to be flogged. But I believe that Google actually was involved. The company that had originally beta tested them had put in some Bluetooth tracking beacons, which was apparently, privacy rights folks did not like that at all. Because if you're going to put something in, you know, you don't want to be tracked for ads or anything like that. But so that's been removed. The company was then bought into another conglomerate, which Google is apparently a big part of. So it should be interesting. And those engineers know what the hell they're doing. If anybody does. So we can hope. At the very least, we can hope. Now, as far as, we had an interesting story. Fred, you brought this to my attention.
Yes.
There's a website that I don't recommend anybody actually go out to. It's called Right Wing News. And it's got some crazy, ideas about reality. And this one in particular, let's see, the title is, Are You Kidding? All caps, of course. House Dems Strike to Implement First Sharia Law. Okay. All right. Let's dig into that for just a second here. What are they saying here?
Yeah, that was definite clickbait. I read that and was like, whoa, okay, let's see what they're talking about.
Okay, all right. So, as we enjoyed the holidays with our family and friends, House Democrats, in, again, big caps letters, moved to implement America's first Sharia law. If they get their way, they will be stripping us of our basic rights, and we need to be prepared for their terrifying, again, in all caps, hope, and get Americans aware of what is happening! Exclamation point. I'm just gonna, you know, the TLDR of this is that they're wrong.
Very, very wrong.
They could not be more wrong. For one, it's a resolution. It is not actually a law. It has no teeth. There is nothing about it that can be enforced.
In fact, if
it's amazing,
the resolution itself, the main resolution condemning violence, bigotry, and hateful rhetoric towards Muslims in the United States, it doesn't even punish anything. In fact, later on, it just urges local and federal law enforcement authorities to work to prevent hate crimes and to prosecute to the fullest extent of the law those perpetrators of hate crimes. So basically, House Democrats took time to urge federal and local lawmakers to do their job.
That's really all it says, yeah. From the Right Wing News, on December 17th, Democratic congressman quietly sponsored House Resolution 569, a resolution that asked lawmakers to condemn violence, bigotry, and hateful rhetoric towards Muslims in the United States. This resolution specifically mentions Muslims, no other religious groups, and will serve as a test by which further criminalization of Islamophobia may be introduced. No, it doesn't do that at all.
Well, further criminalizing of Islamophobia, there's no criminalizing in this resolution. So what further criminalizing can we get to?
But hate and fear-mongering.
Well, the problem you're hitting is you're expecting these people to actually understand how the government works.
Yeah. Well, they certainly don't. I think really this is butthurt over that we're apologizing in a way. Giving a mea culpa for all the horrible things that have been lambasted against the Muslim population. Or, really, I have an issue that they only say Muslims, when really we probably ought to be apologizing to any group that wears a turban. So that would be the Sikhs, possible Hindus. Anyone that wears ethnic clothing is being targeted as being, well, all sorts of horrible things that I'm not going to say.
They kind of get into that in the resolution. Mm-hmm. The second line right after, you know, talking about condemning violence, whereas the victims of anti-Muslim hate crimes and rhetoric have faced physical, verbal, and emotional abuse because they were Muslim or believed to be Muslim. So at least they mention it in the resolution. You know, it's the very next line. It's not just for Muslims. It's for people that are believed to be Muslims and then treated like crap because of it.
Yeah. It's basically, this is just reinforcing our rights. That's really the only thing that this resolution does. But they are immediately saying that it does exactly the opposite. The text of the bill, let's see, at the very end, resolved that the House of Representatives, there are 7 points. I'm going to read them out. 1, expresses its condolences for the victims of anti-Muslim hate crimes. 2, steadfastly confirms its dedication to the rights and dignity of all its citizens of all faiths, beliefs, and cultures. 3, denounces in the strongest terms the increase of hate speech, intimidation, violence, vandalism, arson, and other crimes targeted against mosques, Muslims, or those perceived to be Muslim. 4, recognizes that the United States Muslim community has made countless positive contributions to the United States society. 5, declares that the civil rights and civil liberties of all United States citizens, including Muslims in the United States, should be protected and preserved. 6, urges local and federal law enforcement authorities to work to prevent hate crimes and to prosecute to the fullest extent of the law those perpetrators of hate crimes. And 7, reaffirms the inalienable right of every citizen to live without fear and intimidation and to practice their freedom of faith. This has no teeth. It's saying that we should continue to do all the things that we're already supposed to do. That's really all this does. In no way does this do what this article says, which is the only way to keep Sharia law from stripping us of our First Amendment rights is to practice them. It is reaffirming your First Amendment rights.
First Amendment rights that they don't understand.
At all.
As they state, indeed, free speech was never intended to defend inoffensive speech because inoffensive speech needs no protection. Freedom of speech is solely for the offensive, meant to prevent those who would limit it because of their opposing beliefs.
They don't know what hate speech is.
Oh, they really don't. They call that out. They actually call that out in their own... Where is it? Democrats have shamelessly lumped together hate speech with violence in an effort to compare criticism of Islam to physically harming Muslims. And then they state that they don't actually spell out for them what that hate speech is, like what it means. Yeah, yet gives no definition for what it considers hate speech. You know, all those words that you can't say about all the other groups you want to say, just put Muslims in there too. You can't say it. You already know what hate speech is. We've laid it out for you, and you keep doing it.
And, you know, you can type into Google, define hate, and speech is the very second item. Crime is the first one. So, okay, let's see what it says. Oh, hate speech is speech that offends, threatens, or insults groups based on race, color, religion, national origin, sexual orientation, disability, or other traits.
I actually heard that they were going to amend the definition of hate speech and that the new definition, when you looked it up, was going to be whatever Donald Trump said last week.
Nice. That might be effective.
Yeah, that way you can just real quick go to his videos and it'll be like, oh, that's hate speech. I got it.
That might work. Maybe. But it would change, like, every other sentence because he backpedals and changes everything as he talks.
That is very true.
That definition, by the way, for anyone wondering, was not just from Google. Google scraped that one from theamericanbar.org. So, hate speech debate within Students in Action, Public Education Initiatives Award, Students in Action. So it is out there. In fact, I will put that link in our show notes so that should anyone be curious, you can find it. There we go. And there. Okay. So you can find it. Now, I don't think that we need to say anything more about that other than please check your references and make sure that the things that you're reading are actually portraying things accurately. Do some research. Obviously, we make mistakes. That's why we have an errata section. We are not infallible. We don't want to be infallible. We want to be taken to task for the things that we say, and we want to be right more than anything else. So if we're wrong about something, please let us know. If we are right about something, hey, let us know too. That'd be fantastic. But we are not the end result of knowledge. We are merely a stub to go find more information. So read the articles, and then if you're curious about what the heck are they actually talking about, go ahead and read the source material. In fact, I always encourage you, find the source material. Wikipedia is fantastic, but it all also has to have an external source. It is not... It is a pool, a bucket of knowledge, where you pour more knowledge into it from other sources. There's always a link down at the bottom for cited references. Go ahead, follow those if you can. Dig deeper, you'll find more. Just like with this. In fact, that's one of the reasons why we have your logical fallacies. To this week, it is No True Scotsman. Stephen, would you like to read it?
Certainly. It's the, you made what could be called an appeal to purity as a way to dismiss relevant criticisms or flaws in your argument. In this form of fallacy, faulty reasoning, one's beliefs is rendered unfalsifiable because no matter how compelling the evidence is, one simply shifts the goalposts so it won't apply to a supposedly true example. This kind of post-rationalization is a way to avoid valid criticisms of one's argument.
As an example, Angus declares that Scotsmen do not put sugar on their porridge, to which Lachen points out that he is a Scotsman and puts sugar on his porridge. Furious, like a true Scot, Angus yells that no true Scotsman sugars his porridge. And there you go. By the way, I would like to put some sugar on my porridge, so. And I am also a Scotsman, so there.
Are you furious like a true Scot?
Because
I just now realized that for the first time. It's like, furious like a true Scot. I didn't realize they were also angry.
Well, it depends. They're certainly angry at the British.
I guess that's the way you take it, yes.
They're very angry at the British. Okay, and let's go into... The bad, as if that wasn't bad enough. Kind of odd that we did talk about something horrible in the good section, but at least the reality of it is not bad, which is why it was in the good. A Princeton study has confirmed what we have thought for a while. Of course, it's a study, therefore there might be another study that then disregards what this study says. And that's kind of how it works. But this study, in fact, says that the U.S. is no longer a democracy. It is now an oligarchy. What do you guys think about that?
I also have done my research, and I remember this report coming out, or one similar to it, a number of months ago that I read. And no, if you look at how much money is going into politics and how much that actually affects how certain bills actually get to the floor and or if a bill even gets through a committee, I can definitely agree with this entirely.
Oligarchy, a simple definition for those that are a little wary on the term, a country, business, etc., that is controlled by a small group of people. The people that control a country, business, etc., again, that small group. The full definition being a government in which a small group exercises control, especially for corrupt and selfish purposes, also a group exercising such control. So it's not a democracy where we all get an equal say. We're not even a representative democracy where we elect those people to then give our say in turn. No, at this point, there's just a very small majority of people, minority of people, I'm sorry, that actually control the government and make everything happen. I don't think that anybody can really argue that, because that's what we've seen. That's why we have people like Senator Bernie Sanders running for election, trying to not take money from giant super PACs, calling out people for being controlled by money.
Yeah, if
and so far succeeding.
Mostly.
Yeah, and that's the main, like, if you wanted to ignore every other example that we had turned into an oligarchy, Bernie Sanders' campaign would be the most glaring, and it's his campaign slogan, you know, not for sale to the billionaires.
Yeah.
He puts it right in everybody's face for them to see that I would like to give you democracy, but the only way for me to do that is for everyone to support me so that the billionaires don't get their say and only their say.
And the problem is, I see a lot when studies like this come out, is at least for those people who haven't been heavily educated when it comes to government and policy and everything else, they see studies like this and think, okay, we're now an oligarchy. Okay, there's nothing I can do about it. This is the new norm, and we just go on from there. They can't see or don't conceive of a way that, no, that doesn't have to be the way it's going to be forever, and we can't either shift back or become again what we were.
Yeah, the government, as we have established it, does work. The problem is that we have allowed it to get out of control by letting those with a well-funded interest make certain decisions on our behalf for themselves that are only going to perpetuate their own interests, you know, creating that cycle of it's financial. You know, people don't want to vote against their own pocketbook, against their own self-interest. I can understand that. I can understand how it has become corrupt. It's a business. It's bad for those of us that have to rely on it, not as a business, not as a way to make money, but as a way of life, how our entire culture is governed. That's bad. But given that it takes a certain kind of person to run for elected office, and that kind of person, in many ways, can be corrupted, let's say, fairly easily by enough money, we've kind of done it to ourselves. So what do? We have to change things. Somehow, some way, we have to change things. We have to pick and choose. We have to get people in there that are not actually going to go for their own self-interest all the time, which is hard, because those people typically are not the ones that want to run for public office.
Well, you know, I always go back to a quote from Rockefeller from back in the day. He said, the only problem with capitalism is capitalists. And I look at the problem you have nowadays with most businesses and even money getting into politics is we keep seeing again and again businesses, oil industry, big sugar, whoever you want to look at, mm-hmm. they tend to take the short-term, most money gain idea instead of the longer term where, yeah, short term you might not make as much, but in the longer term you're going to be more sustainable and come out where you would be if you'd taken the short term view, or even better off. And it's that dichotomy between this obsession with the short term gains that has gotten us, I think, in our situation.
Yeah, there is definitely a lot of that. There is no long term thinking that, you know, I've said before, that knowing that wisdom, true wisdom, is seeing the value in a tree planted that you will never experience the shade from. You know, that kind of forward thinking, that's really hard to come by. And often, even if it is put into place, it is then degraded by the people that come behind that can then put a say in, saying, no, that wasn't a good idea, let's change that. You have to have a more consistent personality in place. Somebody that is willing to make some hard choices, sometimes self-defeating choices. You know, you sometimes have to vote your own self out of office in order to make a difference. And a lot of people aren't willing to do that because it's not in their own self-interest. And, well, many people are just natively selfish. So, this report, the central point that emerges from our research is that economic entities and organized groups representing business interests have substantial independent impacts on U.S. government policy. While mass-based interest groups that and average citizens have little or no independent influence, the results provide substantial support for theories of economic elite domination and for theories of biased pluralism, but not for theories of majoritarian electoral democracy or majoritarian pluralism. Okay, that is a new word for my vernacular. Let me search that. What the hell is that? Okay, governed by or believing in decision by the majority. Majoritarian. Okay. Man, these university types, they like their big words, don't they? I do too. So, but not theories of majoritarian electoral democracy or majoritarian pluralism. Given the events of the past two decades, it's clear that this is the truth. Our democracy is a sham. The desires and opinions of the common people are briefly considered before being disregarded if they don't line up with those of the elites. From Ronald Reagan's reckless deregulations, Clinton's revoking of the Glass-Steagall Act, and continued deregulation of George W. Bush years leading directly to the Great Recession, our government has acted to enrich the oligarchs and empower the institutions that they control. The American middle class has been consistently mistreated and abused by these entities, turned upside down, shook like a piggy bank, a plaything to be exploited to keep the money and power funneling up to the top until today, when the middle class is naught but a carcass of what it once was. That's elegant prose, I think, and staggeringly accurate.
I love the fact they actually mentioned the Glass-Steagall Act in there, which, you know, before I was definitely not a fan of Clinton back in my younger days.
Yeah.
As I got more educated, I'm a hardcore fan of Clinton. I love the fact that we actually had that massive surplus of money by the end of his presidency, but that, honestly, the Glass-Steagall Act repealing of that is probably one of the single greatest screw-ups that he ever did, which led directly to the Great Recession in 07.
Yeah. Well, I don't necessarily know that he knew what was going to happen, you know, as a result of removing that, which is what the Glass-Steagall Act did was it forced the banks to behave less like an actual bank, a funding institution where money was safe, and they were able to invest capital basically in the stock market and kind of act like a casino.
Well, what it did, the whole thing of the Glass-Steagall Act allowed the banks to be not just banks but also investment banks.
Yeah. Which is not what you want. I mean, sure, you want to be able to invest money to let your money make more money. As people, that's what you want. You don't necessarily want your bank, the one that's supposed to hold the money and keep it safe for you. You don't want them doing that.
Right. That should be your choice to gamble with your own money, not like, hey, I'm going to go to the bank and pull out $200 and then be like, hey, by the way, we kind of lost that. We got a bad tip. Turns out Martha Stewart didn't have all the insider deals, and you have no money now.
Yeah, to reference, again, the Internet for definitions, the Glass-Steagall Act, also known as the Banking Act of 1933, was passed by Congress in 1933 and prohibited, because it's now in the past, commercial banks from engaging in the investment business. It was enacted as an emergency response to the failure of nearly 5,000 banks during the Great Depression.
And I know why he repealed it, too, was because, well, a lot of his advisors, who were also being advised by several of the major banking institutions and everything else, were going, this has been in place now for almost 70 years. It's done good. We've learned our lesson. Everything's great. You can go ahead and repeal this. And we promise not to do exactly what we did back in the 30s,
right,
and 20s.
We'll self-regulate.
Exactly what happened in the 2000s.
Yeah, we'll self-regulate. It'll all be fine. You can trust us. Mm-mm. No, no. As we've seen, as we have lived through, they cannot be trusted to self-regulate themselves in that manner. Not at all. And we need that Glass-Steagall Act back, or at least something very similar to it, that makes banks be banks, not stock market traders.
I think a lot of that's going to depend on who gets in office with this next election cycle.
That's very true. There was a, let's see, I'll find it. There was a kind of a little list of things that you need to know when it's going to come down to whether or not you vote for a Democrat or a Republican in this next election cycle, which, by the way, is this year, everyone. Oh, the silly thing. It's hearing me type, so it tries to mute me, even though I'm still talking. That's really annoying. So I have to be careful with what I'm actually doing here. How annoying. Anyway, basically, things that you need to remember is that if you vote for a Republican, we're going to have continued wars. We're going to go back into the Middle East and continue to bog ourselves down in the sand in essentially holy wars that we have no purpose in being in. We're going to continue with more investment banking in that way, because that's not going to stop, because it's not in the bank's best interest to allow that to stop. So they're going to continue to pour more money into politics, because that's what they've been doing. Probably the biggest thing that we need to be concerned with is who is going to be on the Supreme Court. President gets to nominate somebody, and then they have to be approved, of course, but that nomination is going to come from whoever is the next president, because we've got a couple ailing, aging folks there. You know, we might, we could very easily see Ruth Bader Ginsburg stepping down, if not stepping out of the planet. She's getting up there. So that matters a great deal. I mean, if you've been paying attention to this show and the news over the last year, over 2015, you know how many amazing decisions, both good and bad, have come out of the Supreme Court. It's really important. So it's split essentially down the middle with one swing vote, and he is unreliable. So if you don't want to have a overly conservative, overly old, you know, I do have to say age is a thing, because people are a product of their time. Really, overall, the people that are on there, even given their considerable age, they have been quite good about being reasonable and logical and going through the process. So I must say that even though I completely disagree with almost everything that Anton Scalia does, he has been a good justice. You know, he has said many good arguments. I know that there's probably people out there that are screaming at me like, what are you saying? What can you possibly figure out that Anton Scalia has done right? There have been a few things. At the very least, he's very entertaining. But these folks, they serve for life. They don't have any term limit. Maybe we should have a term limit, but maybe it should be 50 years or something, a nice long one. But a lot of these folks, they do need to get out of there, because we need people from a different generation that would have a different sensibility. Even though the oldest one on there, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, has a great sensibility, we need younger blood in there. And as Kate in the chat room has said, Obama would make a great SCOTUS. He probably would. But though he was a lawyer, he's never practiced as a judge. I'm not sure if that's even a requirement, though, whether or not you have to be a judge to then be nominated to be a Supreme Court justice. He was a constitutional lawyer, so he's got a great head on his shoulder for things like that. But I don't know. So The thing to definitely worry about is what can happen. What can a president do? And a lot of those things, the implications are great and much longer lasting than a 4-year or even 8-year term.
Just as a quick fill-in, there are actually no official qualifications for becoming a Supreme Court justice.
What?
The Constitution spells out age, citizenship, and residency requirements for becoming President of the United States or member of Congress, but mentions no rules for joining the nation's highest court.
Oh, crap.
Also, there is precedent about a president who then, after they served their term, actually became a member of the Supreme Court. It's only happened once, though.
Andy, I'm going to send you a link that 7 things you might not know about the U.S. Supreme Court, so you can put it in the show notes if you...
Okay, yeah, just put it in the group chat, and I'll put it in the show notes, available at oreillyradio.com for show 90, which you're obviously listening to right now. In other bad news, since there's not much other to say than, yeah, we're an oligarchy now, and we need to change that. We need to go back to our representative democracy, is that famed singer Natalie Cole, the daughter of Nat King Cole, is dead. She died at age 65 of congestive heart failure. So, it's sad news. Sad, sad news. And definitely, we have to put that in the bad. Let me put that that link that you sent me right in the show notes. There it is, about the Supreme Court. And I think we are now on to... the ugly. And this is really ugly. Now, we were kind of, I'm remembering things that we said on the show over the past year. And when Benjamin Netanyahu was working very diligently right before his election, his re-election, to get in front of the U.S. Congress and had Speaker Boehner, whatever his name is, had him basically extend an invite to him outside normal State Department channels. There was chat that was kind of a treasonous act, especially given all the things that were said. Well, apparently, it goes even deeper than that. There have been leaked wiretaps that reveal that Netanyahu apparently bribed Republicans to sabotage Obama's Iran peace deal. This is all sorts of bad. A U.S. intelligence officer familiar with the intercepts said Israel's pitch to undecided lawmakers often included such questions as, quote, how can we get your vote? What's it going to take? Mr. Netanyahu and some of his allies voiced confidence that they could win enough votes. The answer to Israeli proposals have yet to be fully revealed, but it is clear that favors were offered, bribes were proposed, and from the subsequent behaviors of Republican lawmakers, we can only infer that our legislators accepted those bribes from a foreign government in exchange for opposing the diplomatic efforts of the Obama administration. At the very least, the very discussion itself indicates that they conspired with a foreign government to undermine the foreign policy agenda of their elected commander-in-chief. I believe that amounts to treason.
If you needed further evidence that we are now an oligarchy, when other nations can look at our system and go, well, if I come at it with enough money, I can get this small group of people to go the way I want them to. It's right here.
Well, in truth, the only difference from this to standard GOP policy I've seen basically since Obama hit office is they took money from a foreign government to do the exact same thing they were going to try to do anyways.
Well, they were targeting specifically those that were undecided. So they were, in one way or another, they have been caught with their hand in the cookie jar influencing American politics and global political posturing. It's, and then of course, if we look at Israel versus Iran, well, they hate each other. They hate each other so bad. We could go on for several shows and just talk about how they hate each other over history. They do not want each other to exist. Israel would be perfectly happy turning all of Iran to glass. Iran, depending on who you ask, is going to say the exact same thing about Israel. So they have vested interests in sabotaging one another. And that's a known quantity. That's the kind of thing that the school bully has come over and said, you know what, I think that you really need to give me your lunch money forever. That's kind of the thing that's going on here. Of course, maybe there's a better deal. Maybe instead of taking your lunch money, you're taking your lunch money from somebody else. You know, instead you're picking your dad's pocket for extra lunch money so that you can also eat. Yeah, maybe my analogy has gone off the rails. I don't know. But there's something to all of this. But since we're now living in an oligarchy, are we going to see anything come from this? I don't really think so.
Well, no, because the people that you would see some kind of negative aspect come from this are now arguing that the NSA shouldn't have been wiretapping members of Congress and that it's bad for them and where is their privacy and, you know, they've now turned one of their main points into what they're trying to be a defense. And I think that there's irony there as well. Just, you know, you guys use this to spy on and get a leg up on anybody you can. But when it's used to find basically treason coming from within Congress, you're going to say that it shouldn't have happened. And that, again, Obama's at fault.
Yeah, this is tantamount to Watergate. But we're not seeing the kind of reaction to it. Is it that we expected it? Are we so numb to the fact?
I think, honestly, it's because, looking at the American populace especially, they are just completely numb. They don't care. None of this even really fazes them because what are they going to be able to do about it? So there's no real outcry.
Yeah, I'm not terribly surprised by this.
Could it also be because they failed in their attempt? And then not only did they fail in their attempt, but when this treaty went through, it's now proved to be successful with Iran turning over their stockpile of uranium. So it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, that's, I can't believe that happened, but you basically wasted your time. Good job, Netanyahu. Like, you got nowhere, and you look dumber for Iran doing the exact opposite of what you claim they would do.
I'm just wondering if there's any penalty at all to being an asshole anymore in politics. It doesn't seem that there is, at least not on the GOP Republican side. In fact, the bigger the asshole you are, the bigger your voting base. You know, we see that with Donald Trump. How can that guy be leading the pack and be spouting such horrible things all the time, never being called into question for it? And if he is, he swats it away like it's just a gnat. And then it just gives him better press all the time. I don't understand this. If this was, the roles were reversed and it was the Democrats doing this instead of the GOP, oh, the outrage. I could just see all the headlines now. Oh, the outrage would be everywhere. And that, it bothers me that there is such a dichotomy that we expect it so much from the Republicans that it is so accepted, as Kate said, corruption is now accepted in the chat room. It is so accepted that we don't even flinch. And we don't hold them to task for it. We just don't bother anymore. But if it was the shoe was on the other foot and it was the Democrats, there would be bonfires. You know, it'd be like
60 plus investigations.
Yeah, at least.
Is that, I mean,
Benghazi. Yes.
Obviously, we know, you know, when it comes to control of the House right now, it's in the hands of Republicans.
And Senate.
Is that part of the reason here, then? What would it take for the Democrats to do a full investigation on this and start calling for heads? Because you're absolutely right. Taking Democrats completely out of it, let this story have come out about Obama, he would have been out so fast, he wouldn't have had time to realize that his address changed. Like, it would have been so quick that he probably would no longer even be allowed to live in this country because they would have booted him that hard, that fast.
Well, they would have booted him straight to Guantanamo. Yeah.
Well, going for something even small, even lighter than this, I remember when Biden was running against Vince Obama in the original 2008 election, very correctly. And the whole him on stage doing the whole yeah thing, and that completely killed his campaign.
Yeah. It, crazy Uncle Joe. Yeah. It, things like that are not accepted at all. But if you just change the D to an R, all of a sudden, it will get you all the votes ever. I don't understand how this is what we've become. Is it just that the Democrat voting base and those that, you know, wear the flag, essentially, they are just held to a higher standard? Is that what we've become now? Where you have the people of integrity have all flocked to one party, and those that aren't are in the other party, and just because you're in that party, there is a certain good old boy mentality that all of that's just fine. No big deal. You know, I mean, we have people that have shared dick pics and they've gone all over the place, and yet they're still able to have a political career.
To be fair, that guy's last name is Wiener.
If
anybody's going to share dick pics, it should be him.
I know, but that's the thing. It's so, why is that accepted?
Because society shares dick pics.
Well, beyond that, look at how it was handled when it happened with Wiener. He kind of stepped back and went, all right, yeah, it's my fault. You know, I'm sorry that I did this. But if you look at things that have occurred on the other side, they scream and rant and rave about, no, I didn't do this. I had nothing to do with this, everything else, until overwhelming evidence comes up against them.
He did own up to it, yes. However, his name is still Wiener, and he flashed dick pics. That should be in the public consciousness forever.
More than once. He did it after he originally did it.
Yeah, he's a multiple offender.
And I think, Andy, you had mentioned a higher standard when referring to the Democrats. And
yeah.
I think, you know, devil's advocate, not every Democrat's infallible. The Democrats,
oh, no, certainly,
you know,
not.
But it's very – like when you say a higher standard – it's not hard to be the higher standard when you're in comparison. So it's just one of those things where when you look at the Republicans, they're so far off the wagon that it's like, oh, wait, you know, you breathe and you think everyone should be equal. Cool. You're at a higher standard, you know, like just regular everyday type thoughts that most people have are your higher standard. It's such a low bar.
And the GOP members who do have integrity are being shouted down and out from almost any kind of coverage or saying by these truly the radicals who've taken over the party.
Yeah.
And that's where it comes in. You asked if there's any kind of negative consequence. And I think the answer to that ends up being, unfortunately, not the way you would want to. The only negative consequence that we can give them is to vote them out. We have to start voting them out and giving even the more moderate Republicans, the people that aren't this far off the wagon, the chance to get in there and, you know, make the changes from inside.
Yeah, we need to find the ones who don't view compromise, you know, the key cornerstone of politics, to be a dirty word.
It's pretty bad. Now, of course, I'm focusing on, you know, our rather U.S. egocentric idea here that there's no penalty to be paid. But if we look at geopolitical politics, you know, okay, let's look at how we look on the international stage.
We are a goddamn joke.
This is ridiculous. And we can't pull our heads out of our asses.
Trump wins.
What was that?
So on the international stage, I almost hope Trump wins just because the amount of countries that are either passing resolutions or laws that would bar him entry.
Yeah. I don't know. It, frankly, I'm scared. I am so scared of what's going to happen in November. I'm waiting, really, because this is just, it's another cherry bomb in the toilet of the Republican Party. This thing that they've done. At some point, they have to be expelled. They are no longer allowed at the adult table. At least they shouldn't. And yet, we've got too many of them in there. Thanks to Boehner's reign as Speaker of the House, there were rules put into place that no law could be brought to vote unless it was through him. Nothing. Nothing could get done unless he said it could.
And now Paul Ryan's got that control.
Right. And it hasn't been revoked. You know, nobody can... It's still the same way. Nobody can do it. It has to go through them. That's what majority control is. So even if we wanted to, you know, it would take some brave members of Congress to do anything about it. It would take some very brave members to do something. And then they wouldn't be allowed to do it anyway, because the people that they're talking about, like Boehner specifically, he's the one that brought Netanyahu over. Chief architect of this whole thing. And he's the one that wasn't going to allow any votes to happen. So, is there enough checks and balances in our own system to bring these people to any sort of justice? Or is it completely out of their hands? They can't do anything about it. They cannot, just like Glass-Steagall, they cannot be allowed to regulate themselves anymore because they are incapable of self-regulation. So it comes down to us, the voters. Where those that say stupid things somehow speak to a demographic that is perfectly willing to go out there and vote. And those that are, that have a modicum of decorum and doing things right and believe in justice and the way of all these things are ignored, and those folks stay home because they don't want to be bothered with it. They just trust them anyway, and everything will work out. I don't even know what I've said at this point, because I'm so disturbed by this that, okay, everyone listening, please go out and vote. Please, just vote. I don't even care. Just go and vote. Be part of the system. Take part in the process, because this is scary stuff. In the great ship that we are riding, everyone is dead in the wheelhouse, and we're just going to keep going in one direction towards the icebergs. We need somebody in there with a brain that's going to change things. Anybody will do at this point. Except Donald Trump. But he's not the only one that's going to be elected. We're going to have a lot of House representatives, a lot of congressmen, a lot of senators, not all of them, because of the weird, you know, 6 and 4 year and 2 year cycles that we have going on here. But it can make a difference. And we need real leadership back in there that isn't completely corrupt. This speaks of just an overwhelming corruption. And it's not getting enough news. That's what doesn't make any sense. This is Watergate worthy. And it's a little article in the Wall Street Journal, and a couple of people have noticed it. And I don't know. Are we going to hear anything more about it? I don't know.
It is still
not as long as Donald Trump speaking.
At least, you know, I found this through OccupyDemocrats.com, and it's been shared 91,000 times. So that's at least positive. People are going to hear about it.
Well, yeah, and it is still technically a new story. It's only a few days old, so there's still time for it to get a groundswell and people to really start paying attention to it. I think to kind of tie everything more together and to build on what you said, besides voting, everybody that's listening, you have to do your research. Don't just vote. Don't just look at the story and look at the headline and think you know what it contains. I mean, I think we brought that up before when we were talking about the House Resolution 569.
Right.
There are stories out there decrying it as a Sharia law. And if
you it's clearly
only,
not. Yeah.
If you only looked at that headline and then walked away from it in your mind, well, our Congress is just going the way of, you know, Sharia law. You have to do the research. It's not just voting. Look into who you're going to vote for. Look, weigh the pros and cons. Look at what they say. Look at what they've said in the past. Do they, you know, maintain the same line, or have they flip-flopped more than Waffle House pancakes? You have to look into these things. You have to do your homework. You know, voting, it's just more important than filling in a bubble, you know, on a ticket. You have to do the work and know what you're going into. The Republicans, their greatest strength is convincing their base to vote against their best interests because they don't look into it. They don't do the research. They don't look any further ahead of themselves than what's right in front of their face being presented to them as lie. And if they did, I got to imagine that a lot of those votes would change.
I can only hope. I can really only hope. Steven, do you have anything to add?
Just that I hear again and again, even these days, that people saying, especially the young people, the younger generation, saying that my vote doesn't count, it doesn't matter. At some point in the future, I'd like to actually come with the numbers and show just how few votes nowadays it takes, since people are getting, to get into office, and how just that the fact that, yes, the extra voting could shift massively who gets in office.
Yeah, as we get closer to the primary season, because it's coming close, I'm going to dedicate a whole show just on how the election process works, because we need to know about the Electoral College, about how you have delegates and superdelegates, and how much those people matter, because you know what? It's not just politicians that are bought off. It's also superdelegates, so that they can actually figure out who's going to be into the campaigns. So there's a lot to this process, and a lot of it is not necessarily intentionally obfuscated from those of the actual electorate, but it is certainly not highlighted. And a lot of you may not have paid that much attention in American government, or you might have had a teacher that didn't understand it either. So there are things that we need to look at, and it's all there, and we're going to go through it, for good or for ill, at one of these shows. It'll probably be one of the even numbers, maybe show 100. So you got 10 shows from now, we'll go over it. So in 10 weeks. So... also, I have one thing to add before we start to wrap it up here. Yes, the article is out on Wall Street Journal, WSJ.com. However, it's behind a paywall. You can't read the fucking article unless you sign in or have, you know, and unless you pay for the whole newspaper, basically. This is the kind of thing, this really important news should not be behind a paywall. I have real issue with that. This is the kind of thing that I would pirate. On principle. Because it's that important. So, thank you very much for Occupy Democrats for actually giving us a little bit further insight into it. Since, yes, the origin of the story is unfortunately behind a big wall. And we can't get there unless we pay whatever arbitrary fee. I don't want the Wall Street Journal. I want this article. Can I pay for this article? No, apparently not. So that's the world that we're in. So yeah, do what you can. Advertising does pay for things, so sometimes ad blockers are a bad thing. But that's something for another show. So let's see here. That does it for the ugly, and that was certainly ugly enough. I'm not sure that we're going to see anything. Please, on the bright side, be involved in politics. Talk politics with the people that you don't usually talk politics. See if you can get any sense into their heads, because there's some things that they don't know that maybe they need to know. And, you know, if it comes up with a good conversation, then nobody has lost anything. And let's go into picks, entertainment reviews and nitpicks and things like that. Fred, you have one?
I found a new podcast love that's not O'Reilly Radio. I'm splitting my time going over the old shows. And I've actually gotten really into a podcast called God Awful Movies. It is run by No Illusions and Heath Enright of The Scathing Atheist and The Skeptocrat. And they're joined by Eli Bosnick, who is wildly funny. He's a comedian, and he's occasionally on those shows with them, but he is really one of the main voices on God-Awful Movies. Basically, they take Christian cinema, and they tear it apart. They Mystery Science Theater 3000, they give you the review. I guess it's less Mystery Science Theater 3000 because they're not doing it while actually watching the movie, but they walk you through the movie and what you see, and then they just tear it apart. And it's amazingly funny, very witty, very dirty. It definitely yeah. has a mature rating attached to it. So be prepared for that. Be prepared for some offensive material. But, you know, if you are of that mindset, atheist, agnostic, questioning anything, these guys take on these movies, which are terrible movies anyway. I mean, just listening to anybody review them would be fantastic.
They're really bad.
But listening yeah. to them from the viewpoint of, you know, fellow atheists or humanists or agnostics is a fantastic way to listen to these movies be torn apart and roasted. I cannot hold in laughter, which is very rare for me. I'll watch stand-up comedy, and I can watch hour specials and not laugh out loud once. I listen to these hour-long podcasts, and I am constantly laughing out loud to the point where people look at you like, why are you laughing out loud? That's a little weird. And it's like, oh, well, you got to be in my headphones, man.
Mr. Sims, is there something you'd like to share with the class?
No, because I'll get kicked out.
They have a 19 in the can. I've provided a link to godawfulmovies.libsyn.com where the show lives. They've done Miracle Man, No Greater Love, War Room, Left Behind from 2000, Left Behind 2, Tribulation Force, Left Behind World at War. Yes, they made many of them.
Yes, they did all three of those movies yeah. back to back to back in three consecutive weeks. Mm-hmm. Those are three of my favorite episodes. The fact that they yeah. did all three of them in consecutive weeks, and it, you know, just the way that they build on them. So then they start comparing them, which is the best one cinematically, which is the best acting, but at the same time being like, why would we do this?
Yes, why are we doing this to ourselves? Then they go Brother White, Catching Faith, Last Ounce of Courage, The Lock-In, Redeemed, A Thief in the Night, which is a rather popular in one in the Christian cinemas, A Distant Thunder, also equally popular, Image of the Beast, Prodigal Planet, What If, Silver Bells, Christmas Angel, and the last one they did on December 29th is Loving the Bad Man.
Thief in the Night, A Distant Thunder, and Image of the Beast is also another three, like, movie series.
Oh, are they? Okay.
Yes, it's three movies that tie into one another, sequels, if you will, and they did those in consecutive weeks as well. So when you listen to them, it is going from one movie to the next, and they are beating themselves up for doing that, even though they just did it with the Left Behind series.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they're it's a piece of work, what they're doing. I definitely hats off to I wouldn't do that to myself. I really won't ever do that to myself. No.
You did that to yourself with the Republican debates.
I did, yes, but that has more bearing on my life than whatever a crazy apologetic would be.
Okay, I can see that.
You know? Now, I have watched a couple, I did watch a
oh god, what was it?
Anyway, I have done that to myself once.
No, say, didn't you God's Not Dead?
That's the one. Yeah, God's Not Dead. I see, I've already blocked it from my memory. It was that bad. It's a horrible movie. So, yes, there's that. All right, so God-awful movies, or the Gamcast, as they like to call it. That is a great pick. Hours of entertainment. Steven, do you have anything?
Not this week, but next time I'm on, I'll make sure to have something prepared for it.
Okie dokie. I don't really have anything this week either, other than Happy New Year, everyone, one and all. Let's make this a good one. I'm not one for doing any huge resolutions or anything like that, but you know, if you have any suggestions for the show, how about you go ahead and send those over to us at ohreallyradiopodcast@gmail.com. And I think that is going to be it. Do you guys have anything else to plug? Anything that we need to know before we go?
Last time I was on, I plugged Star Wars. I'm going to start getting people pumped up for the next big thing. February, Deadpool, people. It's coming.
Oh, that's right. Oh, man.
I'm going to back up Andy on that one.
There is a second Red Band trailer out now, too. So, I mean, if you wanted to add that on somebody's pick, go look at it because it's amazing.
I like some of these trailers. What was that, Steven?
I've got a backup Fred on that Deadpool definitely coming in February.
Alrighty. Also, we do have a couple other condolences in the chat room. Apparently, the original voice of Boba Fett died today at the age of 95. And Wayne Rogers of MASH, he died at age 85 today. So apparently, 2016 is starting off with a bang. Unfortunately. So sad. So sad. Condolences to all those that really love their work. And, of course, them as people. All right. That's going to do it. We'll be back next Friday about 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. In the meantime, the conversation should continue on the web. Head over to orellyradio.com. That's orellyradio.com for all the links right at the top of the page. And do watch us live and chat in the IRC if you can. If you've liked what we've done here, you can help keep the lights on. Follow the Help Us link. Okay, don't follow the Help Us link yet. I have to go fix the patreon.com/Cowan account. If that's too rich for you, which obviously it may be, you can contribute to the show in other ways. Let's see. How can you do that? Ah, yes. The most important one ever. Wherever you found us, go leave a review. A favorable review if you can. And spread the word of the show. You can also send unclaimed lottery tickets, hate mail, unsolicited advice, whatever you want, corrections, advertising offers, etc. You can send all those to orellyradiopodcast@gmail.com. Also, we have a subreddit where you can vote stories up and down and leave us a glowing review, etc. Voicemail account. Call us, 470-222-ORLY, 6759. We'll also take text messages there and we'll play them on the air. I have no shame whatsoever. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Google+. Subscribe to the YouTube channel so you never miss a beat. And we can't thank you enough for spending some time with us. Till next time, this has been O'Reilly Radio, part of the Cowan Services Network. Music for the show was created by Kevin McLeod of Incomtech.com. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Toodles.